Coming up next is the Professor James McCanny Science Hour at the Crossroads. Now on shortwave, WWCR, frequency 5.070 at 7 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays, and also on Reality Radio Network Internet at www.realityradionetwork.com on Thursday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. And now, once again, here's your host, the Professor.
Good evening, and it is April 5th, 2007. Just a quick note to begin with, many sporting events, baseball starting now, and of course they always have Customer Appreciation Night. And one of the great things about this show, in fact the great thing about this show, are the people that listen, the fans. I don't know if you call them fans or, but at any rate, in an effort to have Customer Appreciation Night, I just want to say thank you. I can't give everybody a baseball or a Tesla tower to have in your backyard at this point. Maybe we'll do that someday. But thank you for listening. And every week I go out and scour the far corners of the world, or information world, at least to try and bring you bits of information that are relevant this week and also will remain. This is something I really keep in mind whenever I do a radio show. I know that these shows are archived and people will be listening to them in 1 and 2 and 3 and 5 years from now. People will still be listening to these archived radio shows. And a lot of people are going back and listening every week to all of my radio shows, which the list is getting quite extensive. So when I do radio shows, I try and keep information not only localized to this week, but also information that teaches you something, so that in 2 or 3 or 5 years, people will come back and especially say somebody just hears about me in 2 years or 3 years. They come back and start listening to these shows. They will learn something. It's not just old, ancient history that they wouldn't be interested in. It's history with an explanation, and that's the key. That's why you won't find this kind of information anywhere else, because of my background, because of my unique way of looking at the world and what's going on around you, especially in the area of science. I heard an interesting comment last night. Someone said that the head of Greenpeace has broken away, and I don't know this from my own knowledge, but I thought it was interesting that now there are people in the green industry saying that nuclear power is much cleaner. Oh boy, is that a mistake? Out of sight, out of mind, does that term ever occur to you? Anybody that thinks that nuclear power is a green energy is sadly distorted and illusionary. If one of those casks, which holds the nuclear waste, if just one of them breaks open, then the entire world would be different forever. So don't think that nuclear energy is green energy. It isn't. It never was and never will be. It's the biggest pollutant source of energy on the planet. And remember that if you want to talk about green energy, wind power is really, we have so much wind power in the United States, we could literally convert to wind power, run automobiles, the technology is there. It's just that the industries won't allow it, and of course they own the governments down to your local government unit. But the solutions are out there. I saw a new XPRIZE come out to make an automobile that's 5 to 50 times more efficient. Well, you know that they already exist. The thing is, we have to convert the entire infrastructure over to using wind power locally. distributing electric power is extremely inefficient. So let me just describe a system for you. Imagine every light pole, as you go down the freeway, every light pole has a little wind generator up on the top. That electricity is delivered directly down to a track, and your electric car derives its power from the track as you drive down the freeway. And of course, you have batteries in your electric car to take you off of the major freeways. But literally, if we put, say, a 1 to 5 kilowatt electrical generator on top of every light pole, and the light electrical interface and infrastructure is already in that pole, all you have to do is attach the wind generator, tie it in with a meter, and drive it down into the electricity would go down into the system. Use it locally so you're not distributing it and losing a lot of that energy. And we could literally, in a couple years at most, and for far less money than all the money that's being spent on keeping up this incredibly old and archaic highway system, so that we can run heavy, giant vehicles on it, a 3,000-pound vehicle to get a 150-pound guy from point A to point B is insane. So where's all your energy going? It's going to move your car around, not you. So at any rate, there are many things that can be done. But back to the nuclear power issue. No, nuclear power is not green energy. Wow, is that a diversion of the truth. So just another quick mention, customer appreciation night. Instead of giving you a baseball, what I try and give you is information. And for example, when the Calculate Primes book came out, what I try and do is put you in a unique perspective to understand the implications of prime numbers. Many people are not that interested in mathematics, but when they understand what prime numbers do out there and how they affect your daily life, the implications are enormous. Many times on this show, I run out of time at the end, and I do not have time to give out the mail order address and that type of information. So I'm going to just do it up front here, just very quickly. More and more people are using mail order to order the Berkey filters. So I want to make sure you understand what this offer is about. The Berkey company, the company that makes and markets the Berkey filters, has a set price. And I cannot change that price, the retail price, for the goods that you receive. I also recommend and insist that people that buy a Berkey filter from me get two extra filters, and I can't change the price on those. That's a set price. It's $315 for the black Berkey filter. In California, you get the travel Berkey, which is slightly smaller but equivalent unit. But all other states and foreign shipping get the Berkey, the black Berkey filter, which is a gravity feed water filter. It takes out viruses and bacteria, leaves the minerals, and so you get the black Berkey filter. It's two canisters that sit on top of each other. There's no electricity, there's no hoses. You just pour the water in the top and out the bottom it comes. These are used worldwide for emergency or by the Red Cross. These are the filter of choice in emergency situations, and it's the one that I personally have researched and recommend. At any rate, it's $315, and that's a set price. So what I do is I offer you free shipping to the 50 states. Foreign, of course, has to pay the shipping, which usually results in about $30 to $40 extra for most foreign shipping. These are shipped UPS, so we need a physical address where UPS will send them to. But here's what you get. You get the Berkey filter with two elements, filter elements, plus I get, include the two extra Berkey filters. That's $315. Now you get free shipping to the 50 states and a free Cato WRX 911 shortwave radio that you can listen to this show on and many other shortwave shows. It's a great little travel emergency radio. We'll play up to 400 hours with the earphones plugged in, 400 hours on a set of AA batteries. And so these are things I believe that you need, water filter and a small emergency radio. And so I include the free shipping and the little radio. It's like pocket size. It's a pretty nice little radio, and it's very good reception. And I take that with me when I travel. So that's what you get, $315. And here's the mail order address. It's mail that to JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota 55392. That's JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota 55392. $315 for the Berkey water filter, shipped UPS. You need a physical street address for that shipping, and then you get the free Cato radio and free shipping. So enough of that. Also, for people interested in the books, the Calculate Primes book is $19.95. That price is going to go up very soon. I can't hold it at that price. That includes shipping, also the mail order address, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota 55392. So anyway, on with the rest of the topics. Now, here is something that is amazing. This hit the, just a second, I have to make a note here, so I include another topic. Sorry. This is live radio. Okay, I made a little note because I have to include a topic here in a minute. But first, what I started with, this past week, the dairy industry started to release information that cloned cows, that's right, cloned cows are becoming quite commonplace in the agricultural industry on farms. And the farmers just think it's great. They'll snip off a piece of one of their favorite cows. They snip off the end of the ear of their favorite cow, quick freeze it, and send it into a laboratory. And 8 months later, a cow comes back. Yes, and they're starting to use cloned cows. The FDA has not approved cloned milk yet, milk from cloned cows. But the dairy industry is pushing for this. And I'm trying to think to myself, now what's wrong with the old method of having, you know, calves and them growing up? Nope, they got to cut off a piece of the ear, send it into a laboratory, have it mixed with laboratory cows, cloned, and then 8 months later, a cow is delivered to their farm. And they are trying to get cloned milk onto the market. And now just a little bit about bees disappearing. And of course, many people have been talking about this topic, the bees disappearing in many of the states, and they're finding out it's because of genetically altered plants. When the bees go in to get the pollen, the bees are very close to that food chain, and they're very delicate creatures. They've, of course, been placed on this earth to pollinate the plants. They're one of the most important essential parts of the entire plant world. They pollinate the flowers, they move the pollen, so that that's the method by which the flowers then become able to germinate seeds. And the bees are dying off due to genetically altered plants, because the pollen is not the same. And of course, the whole idea of genetically altered plants is so that you have to buy seed every year from the seed company, because the seed itself does not grow. And I did talk to a geneticist, and he said all of the old strains of corn are locked in those seeds, but they are simply not hardy enough to grow, and the old genetic strains are really lost. So at any rate, farming over the past 30 years has become the Pandora's box of mankind, and it's starting to come home to roost. But now back on this topic of a cloned cow or cloned animals of any kind, remember, and I talked about this on this radio show a couple times over the past few years, it was, I believe, in the National Geographic, the piece I remember was in Discover magazine, there was a mastodon. Remember the big woolly mammoths with the big horns, the big curling horns? They went into Siberia and cut it out of the tundra. Now, this animal died standing up on all fours, was buried in about, maybe 20 feet of Siberian tundra up in the Russian-Siberian plateau. So these animals were flash frozen so quickly that the plants, the delicate flowers and plants that were tropical plants at the time, froze in the throat of these animals and has been frozen for thousands of years. Now, they took this mastodon, it remained frozen, they took it to a cave where it would be studied. Now, take it to the logical next conclusion. Nobody's heard about Masty the mastodon since then. You don't suppose that somebody's clipping off Masty's little earlobes and cloning mastodons. You wouldn't think that our black ops weirdo Dr. Strangelove scientists out there would be doing that on your government-funded nickel, would you? Of course they are. And they're doing all kinds of things that you probably can't even imagine. And that's why they keep it secret, because if the public knew, they would be so outraged that they would simply shut these operations down. So it is all done in secret, but you better believe somewhere down in a cave, in a dark dungeon, or probably a very nice laboratory underground, is a mastodon, or probably possibly an entire herd of them. And now imagine a place, you know, this is bringing back the entire topic of Jurassic Park to reality. Genetically altered plants, genetically cloned animals. Are they cloning humans for more nefarious reasons? This is starting to get very strange and very bizarre and very distorted. But the point is that, yes, scientists will do this. And if they can't do it above ground, they'll find somebody to fund them and they'll do it underground. Okay, on to the next topic. I just want to make a quick mention regarding the Calculate Primes book. Now, the book, of course, was written for the general public. The DVD was produced for the general public. But regarding professional mathematicians and scientists, the book is simply an introduction to the general public. There is a rigorous 7-part mathematical proof that is available to professionals and under limited distribution. So the people that receive that, the 7-part rigorous proof, that is a limited distribution. So people are mailing in and saying, just send me the 7-part proof. Well, it doesn't just go to everybody. It's a limited distribution, and for very good reasons. This is a patented, copyright, trademark set of issues, but for people who are legitimate mathematicians and scientists, they can get this, and it will be generally released probably fairly soon, but at this time it's still being distributed with a limited distribution. So there is a rigorous mathematical 7-part proof for the prime number paper for professionals. And it's very interesting to look through the list of people who, in fact, are ordering the book. I won't go into it, but you better believe that there's a lot of interest in that. And once again, some of the implications, if you haven't really heard about the book yet, Calculate Primes is a book that presents the solution to a 2,500-year-old mathematics problem showing the patterns of the prime numbers, developing an equation and a system of directly calculating the prime numbers. Now, what does that have to do with you? Well, all of the encryption codes that are used in computer transactions, in secure military and secret national security, satellite, military hardware, all of the encryption to make data unreadable by any intruders, all these encryption systems use prime numbers. And there are various ways of including the prime numbers, but basically it's based on the assumption that you cannot quickly determine prime numbers or their factors. So at any rate, this new work somewhat takes care of that old method of encryption. So yes, there are people out there who have a good deal of interest in this. But as I said, the book and DVD are not the rigorous presentation of this. And so anybody interested in, say, news releases or examining the real hardcore material, the book and DVD are not the source for that. The 7-part rigorous paper is. So just a quick note on that. Okay, to the topic that I made the little note. Remember I was stopped and scribbled a note here for myself? This is a story that will shock and amaze you. This happened right in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The city council approved a license for a company to dump human blood into the sewer system. If you can imagine that. There were workers who were sent down into the sewer system to unplug something, and in the process, it splashed and sprayed, and then the workers looked down and saw that there was human blood in everything that was in the sewer. If you can even imagine this, it got all over some of the people, the workers, in their eyes, on their face, in their mouths, according to the report. And when they traced back, they found out that the sewer department of Minneapolis was not informed that the city had given a license to a company to dump human blood into the sewer system. Now, what are people thinking? What in the world could anybody be thinking dumping human blood into a sewer system? Can you imagine what would grow there? The viruses, you know, it is incomprehensible. How stupid are our city governments? Well, that's another topic, and I've talked before also about the water systems and the sewer systems, and this is a topic which is going to get big very soon. There's some work going on behind the scenes, and I'm in contact with some people right now. I won't say who, because I don't want them to be kind of attacked offline, but we're finding out, and get this, this is an interesting news story breaking, and this topic I've talked about before. The water radio meters that they're placing into people's houses, it turns out there's a very interesting connection here. Now, first I'm going to talk about a company called Walmart, and there are very good professionals in the field, and as I say, I'm not going to talk about names and associations right now, but that will come out soon. There are very high-level professionals attempting to get Walmart to cease and desist putting radio RF transmitter chips in all of their products. I was told that somebody was listening to a radio show the other day, one of the professionals, and there's a toothpaste company that when you open the toothpaste for the first time, it sends a signal out which can be read, transmitted to the main company, and it tells who opened the toothpaste, where, and at what time, using an RF microchip. Now, that is a lot of strange information being passed around. But here is the crux of the issue. A lot of the small microchips including the human microchips that will be implanted in people at some point. The plan, of course, is to implant them in people. They don't transmit very far because they're small. They simply don't have a lot of power. You need quite a bit of electrical power to transmit over a long distance. So they needed a way to get a transmitter localized to everybody's house. Now, here comes Walmart, which owns Home Depot. Home Depot buys a company called National Water Works, which seems like a very innocuous, you know, unoffending type of purchase and ownership. It turns out that the National Water Works company is coming in and selling its system to cities to put radio transmitters inside your house. Now, the radio transmitter, the purpose, the primary purpose, the intended purpose, is to read your water meter and send that signal back to the city where they will then efficiently, I love that word, it's very efficient, and it's really good for you because it's so efficient. It efficiently reads your water meter. Now, this is very bizarre because most people have their water read maybe 2 or 3 or 4 times per year at most. Some guy comes around, you know, it takes a number of days, of course, to do this, to go around to everybody's house and, you know, check the water meter. And typically it's done by a hand remote kind of electronic reader, and there's a little black patch on the front of your house, and it reads the water meter, which is inside the house, down, of course, where it has to keep warm. But the new thing they're trying to force on people is installing this radio meter reader, which is a small transmitter in your house. Now, understand that the National Water Works Company, which is owned by Home Depot, which is owned by Walmart, is insisting that this go in your house. And why is that? Well, it turns out that this is the mother unit. It's the unit that's going to read all of the chips of all of the products in your house. The pants you put on in the morning, the shoes you put on, who's wearing them, how many kids are in your house, what time do you open the toothpaste in the morning. It can read your water. It can tell who is home by reading water usage. It's going to tell an awful lot about you and your family, and it's right in your house, with the idea, with the pretended idea, that this is going to be a very efficient way to read your water usage. Now, more will be coming out on this very shortly, but be prepared because Big Brother is everywhere, and it's coming through stores like Walmart, and it seems like all the retailers are getting in on the game because, see, their benefit is that they can determine marketing patterns. If you use, how often do you open that toothpaste? Is there a way they can enhance the number of times people out there open that toothpaste tube or put on a pair of shoes? Are the people using their shoes as opposed to someone else's? There's all types of marketing information that can feed back to a company, but they need a centralized transmitter in your house to accomplish this. Here comes Walmart, owning this company called National Water Works, forcing people through your local friendly government unit to put these radio transmitters in your house. And they're not telling people what the secondary and actually more important use is of these water meter, radio transmitter, water readers. On to the next topic. So if they're trying to, excuse me, pull that in your community, I would say simply tell them no. The cities and counties and other local government agencies do not have the authority to put a radio transmitter in your house, on your house, or any place else around you. Okay, on to the next topic. Here's something And I mentioned this last week, and this is becoming finalized. I'm sorry this took so long. As I said, all of my books sold out at one time. We still have a little bit of stock left to keep orders going through the month of April, but we're down to, as I say, enough books to keep orders flowing through the month of April, but all of my books have gone into reprinting. Planet X Comets and Earth Changes for the 8th printing, I believe. The Atlantis to Tesla is going into its 5th printing. The Weather Book, which we printed 1.5 times of in the first 2 printings, actually is going into its 3rd printing now. And Surviving Planet X Passage, that one is already out, and I think that's into its 7th or 8th printing. The Calculate Primes book sold out in 1.5 weeks and is already in its 2nd printing. That is just about completed, and we're ready to ship again on that book. We have a few books left, as I said, to carry through the orders, but it was very clear that we had to produce another 2nd printing, like, right away. And so everybody was scrambling on that. So these are all coming out, but the issue I have, of course, is having everything, including the DVDs, everything being reprinted at one time. So it's kind of a shock factor. So I developed a plan to have a special offer to help me through this, and it's a way of helping you out there. Many people have my books. They've had them for years. They're kind of all, they're very well used. They've got notes in them. And a lot of people would like a brand new set of books. And so here's what I decided. I finally crunched through the numbers, and including shipping and all of this. And I came up with a price, and here's what it's going to include. 2 complete sets of all of my books and the DVDs. I'm moving my videos to DVD, so I can put quite a few of those videos on a single DVD, which will be a cost saving on my end, and then I can reduce the price of those down to a very reasonable price, like about $20 for all of my videos that I've been selling, the Comet Lecture, the Astronomy of the 90s, we're still working on the UFO Congress to see if those can go to DVD. And then putting those on a single DVD will greatly reduce your cost and reduce the cost of producing those. So at any rate, here is the plan. And also, I'm producing a new series of lecture DVDs that are starting out in May. And these will be individual topics, probably about 20 in all. And the first one is coming out in May. And these are lectures dealing with my science work. And they'll usually run around 3 hours and 40 minutes per DVD, dealing with intense levels of lectures over and above my books with specific science topics on the many topics that I cover. And details that I can't fit into, like, the radio shows. Okay, so you'll get the first DVD of the new series of lectures. You'll get the entire set of books. Now, this is 2 each, and there's a reason for 2 each of these, putting 2 each of these in this package. The new DVD lecture, the first of the 20 DVD series. The full set of books, The Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes, The Surviving Planet X Passage, The Atlantis to Tesla, Colburn Connection, The Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather, which we call the Weather Book, Calculate Primes, which includes the 3-hour lecture DVD, the new DVD, which is the first of 20 lectures, and the videos on DVD, the videos that you see on my webpage. 2 sets of all of that for $150. Now, at the new pricing, that entire set would run around $170 just for 1 set. So what you're going to get with this special offer is 2 sets, and that includes shipping. So, and what I want you to do is take this set, the second set. Now, you can give it to anybody you want. They're not for resale. You cannot use these and go out and then sell them on Amazon or something. That you cannot do. You have to take this second set and give it to someone like someone at your church who is an authority at your church, someone who, if you know, a head of a department at a university, that would be another good candidate, or someone who is a professional in the science world or a congressman. Take them, pick out a person, and give that entire second set to a designated person. I don't want people going out and preaching and say, you got to read this. I just want to be very subtle, where you go out, you've already read my books, you know about them, and you just take them to somebody and say, here, I've read these, I like them, I think you should take a look at these. And it's just a way of passing this material out to a group of people out there. And so once again, two complete sets of everything, including the DVDs, the videos moved to DVDs, and the first lecture and all the books for $150, includes shipping. Watch for that, and if people want to start mailing in, they can do that to the mail order address, the JMCC PO Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota 55392. They can do that. And it will be posted on my webpage shortly to start people who use the webpage to order. And I think it's really an excellent offer. It's a way for you to get the complete set of everything that's occurred up to this point, the commercially available material, and then have another complete set to give to a person of your choice. On to the next topic. This came out, this has been going on for a while, but Google took all of the pictures of New Orleans, the satellite pictures that they have of New Orleans, and they changed them back to the pre-Katrina New Orleans. And, of course, there's been a congressional hearing on this. This has been in the news, so this is not new news. But I just want to, let me look at a statement here. And it's now, it's April 5th today. Congress, by tomorrow morning, April 6th, has insisted that Google bring back a statement, an official corporate statement to Congress, to disclose if Google was contacted by the City of New Orleans, the FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, the U.S. Geological Survey, or any other government entity about changing the imagery from the new post-Katrina devastation New Orleans to the pre-Katrina New Orleans with all of the beautiful, of course, I lived in New Orleans for a couple years when I went to Tulane University to get my master's degree in physics. I lived in New Orleans, a lovely, beautiful city devastated by the Katrina. And remember, Katrina was not, the New Orleans was not destroyed by Katrina, the hurricane. It was destroyed by the flooding that came afterwards when the levees were blown. And I'll tell you over again, the levees were blown intentionally. There's no question. I lived there. I rode on my bicycle on those levees. I know the system backwards and forwards. And there's no way that the levees blew in seven strategic places around the city all at one time after the storm had passed, after the storm surge had passed. And the levees blew on parts of the city where there was no storm surge at all. There was somewhat of a minor storm surge on Lake Pontchartrain to the north. But New Orleans was destroyed on purpose. It was an ethnic cleansing venture by our friendly local FEMA, which is run by, you know, the guys out there in Washington, some of our lofty leaders who are cooked into the World Bank and the New World Order, if you like to call them that. So once again, Congress is demanding of Google by tomorrow morning, April 6th, to brief the congressional staff on who made the decision to replace the imagery with pre-Katrina images, and to disclose if Google was contacted by the City of New Orleans, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, U.S. Geological Survey, or any other government entity about changing the images on Google, the satellite images. Very interesting. Definitely going to be watching that one very closely. This story came in from a friend, and it's really nice to have friends that are out there active in the world, and I get information that you just wouldn't find anyplace else. I'm going to try and get permission to post this picture on my webpage. This just came in the other day. There is a cave in Mexico where my friend, I won't mention names, they have friends there that have friends that work in, own and operate mines in Mexico. Now, this is a selenite cave that they discovered while looking for lead, zinc, and silver in caves about 1,000 feet down in limestone rock. And what they found were the largest crystals, gypsum. Now, let me describe what gypsum is. It's typically what we call quartz. These are quartz crystals, and I remember when I was in Mexico, I used to live in Mexico, lived in Mexico City for quite some time when I was young. I bought selenite or gypsum crystals, and we typically, as I said, call this quartz. So it looks kind of like a clear, milky, white, clear glass, and they grow in typically six-sided shapes, and they're long, like they look like an icicle, basically. Typically grow in caves, and the Mexican workers would sell these. The one I bought was considered large. It was about 6 inches long. I still have it. And the Mexican workers would break them and take them out of the caves so that they could get them out of the way when they were doing their mining work. So at any rate, the gypsum crystals that they found in this cave 1,000 feet down, and I have the pictures of these. I'm, as I said, going to try and get permission to post this on my page. These crystals are 50 feet long. It looks like Mars or something where you could film a Hollywood movie, you know, the Lost Planet or something. And they show a worker standing there holding his hand up against one of these crystals, and literally it's like 50 feet long. And the whole floor of this cave is covered with giant 50-100 foot long gypsum crystals, quartz crystals, that have over the eons broken off and fallen to the floor, and you can see the new crystals starting to form from the ceiling as the hydrothermal water comes down in and leaches down into this cave. It is absolutely incredible. So I'm going to make a note here right now, get permission, I'm writing the note, to post on my page, and I hope I get permission to do this because it is just absolutely phenomenal. So put that right there, and I hope to be able to post that on my page so everybody can see this amazing photo of gypsum crystals, quartz crystals, and these are just piled up, gigantic piles of these, 50-100 feet long. And, of course, you can imagine the length of time it took to develop those crystals. And they're, as I say, they're still developing from the ceiling, the new ones. And the entire floor of this cave is covered with 50 to 100 foot long quartz crystals just piled up after they broke off, you know, became too heavy to hang from the rock ceiling of the cave and just fell down. And they're just stacked up like they look like toothpicks stacked up, but 100 foot long gypsum quartz toothpicks. Okay, a little sip of juice there. My throat is giving out. Okay, on to, excuse me, what I would call the main topic for tonight, plate tectonics. This is an article that came out of Reuters actually a couple weeks ago, and I did not have time to put this on a previous show, but it's very important. Geology and dating is dating of past events is a very huge quagmire in science. One of the most distorted and deranged aspects of science has to do with dating of geology and other biology, etc. The assumption has always been in standard science that everything happened a long time ago, and therefore you have to find dating mechanisms that accommodate that belief. So it's rather a circular type of argument. Of course, when they talk about plate tectonics, this idea that the continents moved around the Earth, and of course we can see continental drift going on today. But there are some problems with continental drift. Where are the forces that move entire continents sideways? There is no physical explanation. And I talk about this in my weather book. I talk about it in, I think, all of my books. The problem of actually explaining the physics of plate tectonics. You have very nice pictures drawn in a textbook, and they look good with subduction going on and plates moving back and forth. But as with many nice artistic renditions of physical events, there's no physics to support it. So there's no mechanism for these plates to be pushed sideways and mountains to form, etc. But as I said, the main assumption is that the Earth has done everything by itself, forming mountains, moving continents around, and so scientists continue to try and find ways to explain this with pretty pictures and no science. So anyway, this article talks about plate tectonics. Scientists have, of course, published this in the journal Science, the scientific journal that has no peer review, and I say that because it's a journal where it's a clubhouse. There's no peer review. Peer review would imply that there's critical thinking and opposition that would occur when incorrect science tries to enter the journal. But when you have a clubhouse, then, gee, all the good old boys get to publish whatever they want, don't they? As long as it agrees with the standard fare. And so, at any rate, dealing with this topic of plate tectonics, they discovered a molten rock bed that had, well, a formerly molten rock bed, and looked like a multi-layered cake, they said. It contains a mix of volcanic rocks associated with the formation of new crust. And so their interpretation of this was that plate tectonics was well underway 3.8 billion years ago. That's the title of this article from Reuters, and I believe it came out around the 22nd of March when this actual article came out, after the Science article that occurred in the same week. But once again, I want to explain what circular logic is. You assume that plate tectonics occurred early in Earth's history. And then you go out and you find formations, and the geologists are trained to think that way, so they look at something and they go, well, this must have happened early in Earth's history, not imagining that much of that activity could have actually happened maybe 4 to 6 to 10,000 years ago, or 1 million years ago, or 1 billion years ago, but they put a date on it, out of sight, out of mind, I call it. But do you see the circular reasoning that they assume that plate tectonics occurred early in Earth's history, then they go out and find a geological formation, date it to give it an old date, and then confirm the assumption? That is bad logic. And once again, I don't think many scientists today have taken a course in logic. because they do the most illogical things, as in this case. But let me take this another step farther. Let's talk about the planet Venus. Now, this is, I'm going to put a couple logical steps together here. Scientists still claim that Venus is a planet that formed at the beginning of the formation of the solar system, as they say, 4.5 billion years ago. And, of course, I say that Venus is a young planet. It has all the characteristics of a young planet. And I also go farther than the basic statement. I show how it got there. I show how it, the scientific method of getting a planet, how it develops as a large comet, is adapted through the solar system and eventually nestles into the orbit where we see Venus today using a mechanism called tail drag on the large comet. And this is part of the comet model, the plasma discharge comet model that I developed, showing that the comet's orbit is changed as it draws in tail material from the environment. The comet is a large electrical cosmic vacuum cleaner, so to speak. And so that's how a large comet then becomes a planet. Not all comets become planets. Most comets are small. So the capture and development of a planet, such as Venus, is a very rare event. But be that as it may, standard science continues to state that Venus is an ancient 4.5 billion year old planet. But now let's look at the contradiction that occurs when geologists come out and not thinking about Venus at all, and of course the journal Science not thinking about Venus when they publish this article, because Venus doesn't have any plate or tectonic activity. There are no continental divisions on the planet Venus. So, if, you know, and obviously planets should look the same, develop the same, that type of thing. Now, science is pitted with the strange requirement that it's going to have to find a reason for why Venus never developed plates, as in plate tectonics, or developed mountain ranges, because of plate tectonics, and Venus already has mountain ranges. They're volcanic. But at any rate, let me go through the logical steps here. Science, a long time ago, insisted that Venus was ancient 4.5 billion years ago, that it formed with all the other planets. But when you go out and look at Venus using the Magellan probe, there are no plates. There are no plate boundaries. There's no plate tectonics. New study comes along, 2007, published in the journal Science, supposedly top-rated journal in the world. Science publishes an article stating that plate tectonics on Earth was already fully developed 3.8 billion years ago. That's a mere few hundred million years after the formation of the planet Earth, according to this Science article. So, very early on in planetary development, one should have planetary tectonic plates. You're starting to get the drift, but Venus doesn't have any. Wouldn't that imply, Mr. Science Journal editor and peer review staff, that Venus is a very young planet, at least under a number of hundreds of millions of years old? So the problem here, excuse me, I'm losing my voice tonight. The problem here is contradictions in science. This goes on all the time. Almost every time I pick up a science article, whether it's a talky article out of Reuters or CNN or MSNBC or any of the other standard news sources that come out of that deal with science to the public, or if it's with a journal like Science or Nature, those are the biggies that always are reporting to the public, the gee whiz articles that are supposed to impress you. Every time I pick up one of those articles, I find a major contradiction. I find circular logic and reasoning, and as I say, contradictions. If planetary science of Earth says that plate tectonics were well developed a few hundred million years into the development of Earth, and Venus doesn't have any plate tectonics, wouldn't that imply that Venus is a young planet? Certainly not 4.5 billion years old. And Venus is smaller than Earth. It would have lost its atmosphere quicker than Earth. Its surface gravity, because it's a smaller planet than Earth, its surface gravity is far less than that of Earth. So wouldn't it have lost its atmosphere much quicker than Earth? It would have, due to the principles of physics. Also, the Venusian atmosphere is much hotter, meaning that the spray into outer space, the loss of atmosphere, would be much quicker for that reason. But Venus has an atmosphere that is 1,000 times larger than Earth's. What's wrong with this picture? Nothing on Venus makes any sense according to the standard theories. That would mean that Venus, if all of these planets formed at the same time, and nothing has happened since, and there was no outside influence, that would mean that Venus would have had an atmosphere that was absolutely enormous way back then. We know Earth is actually picking up and gaining atmosphere, so that means that Earth would have had a minuscule atmosphere, even though it was bigger. So, as I said, the contradictions, the illogical conclusions, the bad science, the circular logic, or lack of logic, that occurs in the standard science world smacks you in the face every time you pick up an article and read it. And so back to dating, that's the dating of events, geological events, events with the development of creatures on this planet, or the lack of creatures as we see on Venus. All of these then take on a new tone. Standard science is filled with contradictions. That's what this show is all about, partly to explain this to the public and also to give you the real explanation of what's happened out there. Venus is an extremely young planet. The ancients report seeing it coming through the solar system. It is a central figure in the Mayan mythology. That's why, by the way, when people talk about 2012 in the Mayan mythology, they are using one small piece. 2012 has nothing to do with catastrophes or the end of the world. It is just a disinformation ploy to try and roust up misinformation and direct the public away from the true history. If you want to talk about Mayan archaeology, you have to start with the planet Venus when it was in its comet stage. Quetzalcoatl, that's what it's all about. That's the Peruvian, the Inca, the Maya, the Aztec, all refer back to Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent god of the night sky, that eventually its heart became the planet Venus, is the central core of mythologies that are all around the globe. So at any rate, you have to understand the real nature of science to understand our true history and understand how to put dating on these geological events, many of which occurred much more recent than the formation of our planet billions of years ago. Once again, I am out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads.